Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Over the weekend, former NBC News anchor Tom Brokaw stirred controversy by giving his views on assimilation on Meet the Press.
Yeah, I hear when I push people a little harder, I don't know whether I want brown grandbabies. I mean, that's also a part of it. It's the intermarriage that is going on and the cultures that are conflicting with each other. I also happen to believe that the Hispanics should work harder at assimilation. That's one of the things I've been saying for a long time. You know, that they ought not to be just codified in their communities, but make sure that all their kids are learning to speak English and that they feel comfortable in the communities. And that's going to take outreach on both sides, frankly.
Brokaw has apologized, but his initial statement got us thinking about what, quote unquote, assimilation actually means in the United States today. Here to give us some historical context is Mary C. Waters, a professor of sociology at Harvard University. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Thank you.
And also with us is Daniel Jose Older, author of the essay Dispatches from the Language Wars. Thanks for joining us, Daniel.
It's great to be here.
So I'd love to get each of your initial responses of the Tom Brokaw comments. Mary?
Well, I think he made a mistake that many Americans make, which is really underestimating the amount of change and assimilation that immigrants experience. So in fact, immigrants are learning English at a rate faster than they did 100 years ago. And it's just not really something that most Americans understand or know. And they hear people speaking another language and they just assume that somehow immigrants today are different than people who came before.
Daniel, what about your reaction to Brokaw's comments?
I thought it was pretty horrifying on one hand and not surprising on the other hand. I thought it was really telling in his apology, which wasn't much of an apology, but that moment when he said, you know, I was trying to talk about both sides of the story. And that's what we hear so often these days. And it really gets at this idea that a story is something flat. And a story is never flat. There's not one side and another side. There are so many complex sides. But ultimately, it's also about what is our culture and why can't we express it fully, you know, have pride in it, have joy in it. That includes language, and that includes how we carry ourselves in the world. And more, we're seeing that that's being regulated. We're being told not to be who we really are, and that's a problem.
Also, and Mary, I want to ask you here, the idea of assimilation, in my mind, assumes a dominant culture, assumes that there is one quote-unquote culture that the rest of us, if you will, need to adapt to. How do we define American culture? And I know that's a loaded question, and that's pretty much why I'm asking it.
It's a moving target. So, in fact, assimilation as an ideology, as a prescription, is, as you say, something where you're requiring people to change and become something that they're not. Whereas what we really see looking over the long course of history, assimilation is a process whereby immigrants change because they come here, but Americans change because immigrants are here, native-born Americans. And as immigrants become Americans, we become they become we, and we change. So we can see this very clearly if we look back historically. So for instance, one of the things you struggle with, right, defining assimilation, Americans now eat more salsa than ketchup. So how do you then define assimilation for Chinese immigrants or Mexican immigrants? Is it that they eat even more salsa? It's because the dynamics of America is that we are a place where many immigrants have come. And so we can look back historically and say, well, we use Christmas trees because German immigrants came. But we forget that. And we think, oh, well, that's just an American or a Christian custom.
You know, the idea, Mary and Daniel, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, because the fact that you said that more Americans are eating salsa now than they are ketchup is so striking to me, mostly because what that tells me is often when we speak about assimilation, it feels like or acculturation, it feels like the dominant culture wants the subculture, but they don't want the people who represent that culture.
I think that's just something we see over and over. And that's part of why when we're having these conversations about assimilation, it's never simple for us. You know, it's always a question of survival. You know, will our people still be around to tell these stories and to honor our truths in the next generation? generation. We've always been a nation full of lots of different cultures, you know, since we've been calling ourselves America. But some people were brought here enslaved. Some people were doing the enslaving. Some people came here. Some people were forced to come here because of conditions in their country. There's so many different stories of how folks got here. And saying it's all immigration kind of reduces it, right? We don't have an official language in this country. And there's a reason for that. And people want to change that, sure. But right now, that's what it is. There's so many different languages that people speak, and that's beautiful.
There are also socioeconomic layers to this, I would imagine, Mary. There seems to be a little bit of hypocrisy in this idea of being bilingual, because here, at least in New York, we see wealthy parents sending their kids to learn Spanish, Mandarin, Arabic, tons of other languages. And at the same time, there seems to be this pushback against people's being bilingual just because that's who they are.
Right. And I think it inheres in some misguided notion that language is a zero-sum game, that if you can speak Spanish, it means you can't speak English. And what we know is that bilingual people flourish in other countries around the world. And in the United States, it's something that we don't do well in school of teaching other languages, and we do stamp it out. And you're right. You know, the upper class is trying to learn it by sending their kids to immersion classes. At the same time, we're asking immigrant children not to speak their language. So it's a very misguided policy.
Mm-hmm. But there was a study from Pew last year, or 2017, I'm sorry, that found that more than 70% of Latinos in the United States say you don't need to even speak Spanish to be considered Latino, which I think is, again, an interesting point when we talk about who speaks what in the country. Daniel, you've also written about what you describe as the myth of a monolingual America. Tell us about that.
Well, that's not us. You know, first of all, there were people here before anyone else showed up, and, you know, they were forcibly removed, and they're still here too. There's so many different cultures that smash into each other to make this country what it is. And, you know, that's tragic. And there's also glory to it and stories of survival and people who made it through. And all that, all those stories, if we look at them honestly, that's how we move forward to a better America. But so often we're told that we have to pretend everything was great, or make heroes out of, you know, people who committed genocide, or all these other terrible truths where we find ways to whitewash them. And we're so much better for the real truth, even though it's hard to swallow and it's difficult. But also, I think this whole conversation brings up the myth that language itself is a singular, pure thing, right? English has been thrown together from lots of different languages. It has grown and changed so much, as we know by, you know, just read Shakespeare and see how different English is now. But we talk about it as if, or I would say English purists talk about it as if there's one true thing, which is English, and that's decided and it's fixed. But people make language. Culture makes language. Language is thrown together from so many different influences. It's constantly changing. Changes because of technology, and it changes because of different cultural influences. And that's beautiful. That's why language is so amazing, and that's why we love it. That's true of Spanish, too. And now we can find Spanish influences in English, and that's always going to happen. You can't stop that. So now it's a question of, do you move with it and understand it and embrace it and let it flourish, or do you try to clamp it down, which will never work anyway?
Daniel Jose Older is a novelist and author of an essay called Dispatches from the Language Wars in a new anthology called The Good Immigrant. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Mary C. Waters is a professor of sociology at Harvard University. Thanks to you, Mary, as well.
Thank you.